Would you like to sit down, please? I'd like to start by taking you deep back into the past, into the recesses of our tradition. I'd like you to remember all the way back to those days when the government allowed us to invite friends round for lunch. Back in these long-lost days, I invited a friend round for lunch, and she said, "Oh, do you mind if I bring someone else? He's very keen to meet you." And so they arrived at my front door, and her friend turned out to be a priest. We went into the dining room. The table was groaning with deliciousnesses and sweetmeats and lovely delicacies and beautiful homegrown produce bought that morning from Tesco's. And we sat down around the table, and the moment this man sat down, he launched into the most sustained verbal assault on me. First of all, this had to do with my privilege, with the vastness of my suburban Burnley house, with my disgustingly bloated stipend and the luxury of my lifestyle. Then he turned to the Church of England, generally its culture of deference and cover-up, its appalling history of institutional racism and abuse, for all of which I was apparently personally responsible. Then he turned to me as an individual and he berated me for my lack of learning, my appalling ignorance of global theology and the latest developments in Hindu philosophy. And so it went on and on and on. Now, on one level, it's fair enough. Bishops are well used to being the screens onto which people project their anger and frustration. And as a verbal assault, it was nicely structured and well-researched and remarkably detailed. I was rather impressed on many levels. But over lunch, that's just really not on, is it? And that's how I tried to calm him down. Look, I said, is it really reasonable to be abusing me one minute and then swinging my shabby the next? Surely there have to be some level of decorum at a lunch party. Well, of course, that simply unleashed the next level of tirade. Oh, so you're trying to silence me now, are you, typical bishop? You're trying to shut me up. Every effort I made to calm the man down just brought him more abuse. It was an interesting lunch party. I look forward to having him back. But on the league table of unacceptable behaviour at meal times, that man has hardly begun. He's languishing at the bottom, particularly compared to the performance that Jesus puts in the 14th chapter of St. Luke's Gospel, which we've just been hearing all about. This chapter, chapter 14, is all about a meal, the banquet of the kingdom. But also it takes place in the context of a meal. Jesus spends most of chapter 14 sitting around a table with the Pharisees and the religious leaders of his day. You might think, rather as I hopefully thought, that since he was eating the meat and drinking the wine of the Pharisees, that might cause Jesus to moderate his behaviour a little. Well, not a bit of it. There's simply wave after wave of attack. It's a perfectly chosen gospel for today because it must have been exactly like last night's G7 dinner party. Jesus will not be silenced. First of all, he criticizes the Pharisees for their Sunday Sabbath observance. Then he moves on to criticize their desire to sit at the best places on the table. Eventually, eager no doubt to calm him down, one of the people around the table tries to calm things a little. He says, "Jesus, wouldn't it be great to eat bread in the kingdom of God?" He no doubt thinks that a little bit of pious eschatology will calm Jesus down, so often the way out of any sort of awkward theological situation. But Jesus is having none of it. He responds with the parable that we've just listened to, the parable of the banquet. It's one of those parables that leaves you thinking the remarkable thing about Jesus is not that they crucified him, but that it took them so long to get round to it. Because this parable is game, set, and match. It must have made his audience furious. It's a parable with a double meaning. It's a parable of response, but also a parable of invitation. And as we delve into it, we see not just our own vocation as Christians, but also the purpose of this house, of which many of us are proud to be called friends. It's first, then, a parable of response. And to see that, we need to look at the excuses that the guests give. The king sends his servant to invite the A-grade people to the party. They initially respond positively, but then when it gets down to it, they just haven't got time. They have other interests. One of them has just bought some land. Another has just bought some oxen. Another has just got married. The cares of the world matter more to them than the supper party of the king. Jesus speaks these words, looking into the eyes of the religious leaders. For it is they who are putting the things of this world ahead of the things of God's kingdom. In their outward show, in their religious observance, in the depth of their learning, they may at least seem to be role models of the faith. But Jesus knows their hearts. That faith is feigned. They have failed to respond to God's kingdom in the way that they're called to do. But the things of this world are including that response. They are not ready for the banquet of the kingdom. A parable of the response. But then it goes on to be also a parable of invitation. You might think this king, after so many people have said no to his supper party, would just give up and cancel the event. But that is not an option. The banquet must be full. So he sends out his servant again and again. First he goes into the city that symbolizes Jerusalem, the Jewish people. And he invites those who by law or by the assembly would be excluded, the poor and the disabled and the maimed and the blind. They must come to the supper. And then when there's still spaces, they're sent out beyond the city, to the highways and the hedges, to Gentile land. Even the Gentiles are invited to the supper, as St. Luke foreshadows, anticipates the debates in the Acts of the Apostles. It is not acceptable that there should be space. The banquet must be filled with those who have responded. A parable of response. A parable of invitation. And in that twofold way, that parable therefore calls us to the purpose of this house. Pusey House is a place which has the Mass right at its very heart. That in the end is the only thing that really matters. Every other aspect of the life of this house is an expression of its Eucharistic identity. Its learning, its fellowship, its community. All is focused upon the altar. That's because the vocation of this place is to anticipate the banquet of God's kingdom. As such, it must be a place of response. The sclerotic, depressing arguments in the church over this past year about the Eucharist have given away so much about how people feel about this wonderful banquet. For so many, it appears simply to be a lifestyle option, something to do if it's convenient or there's nothing better going on that Sunday. And many talk about it as something that excludes, part of the baggage of inherited church needs to be put to one side. But the Mass does not exclude. It can never exclude. What it does is that it converts. The Mass calls people to decision. And as this place, which has the Mass at its heart, must invite people to response. The Mass here at Pusey House is beautiful. It's a wonderful place to be. But it must first and foremost be converting. And if the Mass is not converting, then its beauty is pure self-indulgence. Here we lay upon the altar bread and wine, the symbols of our lives. And here as we do so, we offer everything. We sit at the foot of Calvary, gazing upon the crucified Christ, who makes of his life a gift to us, and calls us to respond by making of our lives a gift to him, that we might know our place at the feast of the banquet. If this place has the Mass at its heart, it must boldly and fearlessly call people to respond. A place of response, but also a place of invitation. How do we respond when those first invited say no? when people have other interests, when the cares of the world get in the way. Well, we're not dispirited. We're not depressed. We simply go on and on as servants of the King, inviting and inviting and inviting. First, we invite those in the city, the poor, the marginalized, the broken, and the forgotten. Because the sign of the kingdom is that the excluded are included. And that's why it's so inspiring to see what this house now does in terms of sending out volunteers and meeting the needs of some of the most vulnerable adults within the city. But also we invite outside the city, to those whose hearts are far from the Lord, which is why it's so critical that this is a place which gives intellectually coherent account of the gospel, a place to speculate, to wonder, to debate, to inquire. We simply go on and on, inviting. A place of response, a place of invitation. And as we, as its friends, remember what Pusey is about, so we're brought to the heart of our own vocation as Christians. We are called, first and foremost, to response. As we gather in this place, what areas of your life are you holding back from Jesus Christ? In what areas of your life are the cares of this world, land, relationship, property, holding you back from giving everything to Jesus Christ? The feigned faith of the Pharisees must be our warning, because Jesus Christ looks into our hearts as he looked into their hearts. And what he demands of us is everything. The Christ who gives everything wants everything of us. And when we offer everything, we find everything. When we offer everything, we see the purpose of our lives and the purpose of our wealth. We see the beauty of human life and the dignity of our relationships. When we offer everything, we find eternity, the eternity of the heavenly banquet. And as we call to respond, so you and I are called also to invite. Because if this banquet is the very heart of our lives, then what on earth can possibly stop us from inviting others? To whom are you at this time bearing witness to your faith? Whom are you inviting to come with you to this feast of the Mass? We are those servants sent out to go on and on inviting, inviting in the city, inviting outside the city. And there is no greater act of love than that. There is no greater, more beautiful thing that you can do for a fellow human being than invite them to the kingdom feast of eternity. A parable of response, a parable of invitation. It's a joy for us as friends or as worshippers or as part of the community to gather in this place and to give thanks for Pusey House. We delight in the discipline and rigour of its worship and spiritual life. We rejoice in its intellectual life and all it does to capture imaginations with the gospel. We delight to be part of this warm and welcoming community. In a church which in so many ways is wandering and has lost its way and is in danger of losing its sacramental identity altogether, dare in this place to be distinctive. Call people to response boldly and courageously. Invite people to the banquet with warmth and with compassion. But above all, rejoice in your vocation, here in the centre of Oxford, to be a place that anticipates the perfect and eternal beauty of the banquet of God's kingdom.